tonight, huh? Old Bill, come on, you.
Good evening, everybody. This is the Drunken UX Podcast. You are listening to episode number 65, assuming I haven't rolled the dice and moved this to episode 64, which is what my show notes said, but maybe it'll be 66. When you're, you know, the problem I'm having right now is that as I'm trying to get ahead of the game a little bit and be really prepared and do these shows in advance, I start to realize sometimes things move around. So anyway, episode 65, we are going to be talking about static site generators and looking at a specific platform called Bridgetown this evening. We've got Jared White joining us here in just a few moments. Folks, I am your host, Michael Feenan.
I'm your other host, Aaron Hill.
Hi, Aaron. How you doing, Michael? Very wet and very allergic to apparently everything outside right now.
We finally got rain here after, like, 3 days of roughly 90 degree Fahrenheit weather, which, I mean, the last time it snowed was only 2, maybe 3 weeks ago. Like, it was after May 1st. We had snow. So, like, all over the place.
And on that note, if you enjoy the Drunken UX podcast, then you should go check out our sponsors over at NewCloud. You can visit them at newcloud.com/drunkenUX. It's nucloud.com/DrunkenUX. I'm losing my words already, though, with the scotch. They do interactive maps. Go say hello to them and see what they've got if you need an interactive map or an illustration or anything like that. Aaron, you look like you just got back from the gym. What are you drinking?
I did not get back from the gym. It is just very warm here.
It's hot. Yeah, up there, I suppose, air conditioners are not necessarily as much a priority as they are here.
They are, but I don't have one in this house, and I'm still kind of sussing out, like, airflow solutions.
So mojito season, is that what I'm hearing?
I've got fans on the order, but they just haven't gotten here yet. I've been downstairs, it is, like, a nice temperate, like, 72 degrees. Upstairs, I think it's around 80.
Jesus.
And that's cool for, like, for this week. I've got, I don't know what to call this, but I made it by accident this morning. It's got a little bit of amaretto, a little bit of rum.
This morning, good lord, son.
We started early.
Okay, fair enough.
It was like 11, I think, but it's still technically morning. It has amaretto and rum and triple sec and then iced tea. So I made some solar tea on the porch, and it's pretty tasty.
I'm a scotchy boy tonight, not drinking from my cask. I did, though. The cask is now has actual scotch in it that is actually aging. Here in another episode or two, I'll break that out and see what that tastes like. But Balvenie 12, plain old double wood.
Ooh.
I'm in the sweet lands tonight. I do enjoy the sort of rosy nature. I believe it's sherry casks that they finish this in. And it is always nice. This is like the perfect. In fact, I like this so much I have a second bottle ups in my cupboard to replace this one when it's empty. So
it's my favorite one so far too.
Yeah, sherry cask. Yeah, second cask is sherry cask. Yes. Had to double check. So that's what I'm having tonight. And so this week we have a very special guest with us, Jared White. Jared, I think you've got is it a can? Is it a bottle? You've got something with you on your plate. Don't drink from a plate. Drink from a glass or something that's got like a very tall, I don't know, save me.
Not drinking from a plate, that would be a mean feat here. But no, I got a can. Actually, I almost never drink canned beer, but I saw this at a store. It was from Astoria, Oregon, called Bowie Beer. It's an IPA, and it's actually one of my favorite IPAs. It's really good, so I'm enjoying that today.
Everybody's got a little bit of something for the show. That's what I like to see. That's team spirit. team spirit.
That's a pun
double
intended.
Joke. It's a yeah. Double entendre on me. Okay, so let's talk about this, though, real fast, because obviously you heard a third voice. That was the voice of the illustrious Jared White. Jared comes to us from the web consulting firm White Fusion. They focus on small businesses up in the Portland, Oregon area. He is also a very proud Rubyist, which I know is a somewhat underserved part of our web development community. Sorry, Aaron, but you don't count. but Jared is also, is it fair for me to call you sort of the mastermind behind Bridgetown? Is that a fair assessment?
I'll take it, sure. You could even call me the evil mastermind.
I like where your brain is it's, at.
Not too evil, only slightly.
So this is something that came out of a discussion we had a few episodes back. So in episode 61, we talked about emergency websites. And while we were doing that, the idea came up that we mentioned, you know, if you needed a site to be really well supported, that you needed it to be really resilient to a lot of heavy traffic, using a static site generator and pushing to a system like Netlify would help you do that, because it's much easier to serve static pages than dynamic ones. Mm-hmm. And so we're using this episode to actually talk about what that means. We've, of course, mm-hmm. had Dustin Shao, who is one of the dudes behind Gatsby, works with Gatsby.js. Gatsby.js is a static site generator. And with Jared on with us to talk about Bridgetown, we'll get kind of a good sort of deep understanding of some of this stuff. Maybe not super deep, but as much as we can do in an hour anyway. So first and foremost, and to throw back to another guest, when Tatiana Mack was on with us, when was that, Aaron?
That was episode 18. That was season one.
Oh, God, was it?
She was, I don't know if she was our first guest, but she was one of the very first guests we had on the show.
We had her on to talk about universal design and accessibility. Yeah. And
that's when I changed my font size on my blog to 16 pixels. I still remember doing that during the show.
She's also a big voice in the community for a tool called 11T.
Huh.
And we'll have a link to an article that she wrote as well for that. But 11T is another static site generator.
If you have any questions after this episode, which you probably will, that article will answer all of them. It is like soup to nuts, full explanation about static site generators and what they are, etc.
Really, all we're doing is setting up what is going to end up being like an epic showdown between all of the devs for different static site generators, and we're gonna make them all argue about which one is the best one.
90 come in, one goes out.
You know, the celebrity deathmatch model, I think, is how we should really decide all of our technology needs, quite frankly.
That reminds me of that XKCD where it was like, you know, there's 10 standards. I know, I'll make a standard that unifies all of them.
Now there's
11 standards.
and we joke about it, but it is very much like a, you know, when you think about content management systems, right? And you're thinking about what to run your site on, you realize, wow, there aren't just a few CMSs or dozens of CMSs. There are literally hundreds. Why do we have all of these systems trying to do the same job, but in different ways? And it's always because people have different needs and different requirements, and different tools are better at certain things. And so static site generators are kind of evolving very similarly. And there are a ton of names that you may have heard thrown around, or maybe you've used some of them, whether that's Jekyll, Gatsby, 11T, Hugo, Next, Gridsome, and those are just a few. I forgot one. Oh, Bridgetown. Okay. It's another one.
Yeah.
Those are some of the ones that I've heard of, and then I looked at staticgen.com, and I saw the list that I guess isn't even exhaustive at this point. Holy crap, man. Like, there has to be at least 100 on there, maybe more.
Static Gen is a good site if you need to go and you want to do some comparisons of stuff. They also have a lot of information, like everybody rates the systems there. Take that with a grain of salt. Obviously, older systems that have been around longer are clearly going to have more ratings. Doesn't mean they're a better system, though you can break down the sorting based on time spans as well, which is nice. The homepage, my God, there are so many. Dimples? Have you heard of Dimples?
Yeah.
Dimples is a thing. Elsa, there's one. Let's find another one. I want to find it. Oh, here's my favorite. Found it. Hasclunk. Hasclunk. Like your engine, right? You know when your engine has a knock? Well, instead, this has clunk.
Yeah. All right. We need one of those things like, is it a static site generator or is it like a poorly named variable?
That's a good round for this or that on You Don't Know Jack. Yeah.
Right.
It's in a quantum state. It's both at the same time.
Hey, right. And also, shirt idea. But a few of these, so like Gatsby, for instance. Gatsby is one you hear maybe if you're more in the WordPress community, because there is sort of a lean towards this idea of, yes, WordPress is designed to run your site, but you can use it as what this phrase we use called a headless CMS.
Mm-hmm.
All a headless CMS is a content management system that isn't generating your pages. It's a content management system that's only doing content management. So it's a database front end, basically, at that point. Jekyll's a big one because Jekyll is tied very heavily to GitHub. So if you're using GitHub Pages, maybe?
Right. That's where you saw that before.
Those two are linked very heavily, and as a result, people are discovering, hey, and we'll talk about this a little bit more later, but you know, you could theoretically run a whole website right through GitHub using their own baked-in build process that uses Jekyll. It's an option. It's also one reason why it's one of the biggest site generators out there right now, because, of course, it's got that sort of power behind it.
I think we used that for a project when I was at Cornell. I forget what the site was, but we did a, it was like a really simple, small one, and we used Jekyll to generate the content for it.
Yeah.
I think that was the first time I heard of it.
But regardless of what system you decide to go with or use, these things all start to fall into what this word is, and there's a conference named after it as well that you've maybe heard thrown around called Jamstack.
Hmm. I know, I have heard of that. What is, like, I'm assuming this is like comparable to like LAMP, right? Or WAMP or MAMP.
Yeah,
or...
so LAMP. Let's go back first, right? So a LAMP stack.
LAMP is Linux, Apache, MySQL / MariaDB, right, and PHP. That's like what you might run WordPress on.
And the variations thereof are, you know, MAMP, Mac, WAMP, Windows, but right, the rest of it's the same. So
right,
you tell me, what does JAM sound like?
I'm going to guess J is probably JavaScript.
Yes.
The A, it's probably not Apache. It's probably something else. And then the M, no idea. It's probably not MySQL MariaDB. It's probably something else. But the J, I'm pretty confident, is JavaScript.
So yeah, J is absolutely JavaScript. A is APIs.
Okay.
And they produce M markup.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's literally outputting HTML in the most literal sense.
I think I've done Rails apps that were along these lines, although we didn't generate static. We didn't generate static HTML for them, but we did do like JavaScript front end, API back end. That's similar.
There's a site, if you want to learn like a lot about what Jamstacks are and how they function and all of this, there's a site that's just called jamstack.wtf, which, A, great, great TLD.
That is awesome.
It is a good way just to kind of get some real surface level type information about that system. Now, Jared, for the purposes of like, and maybe not, well, maybe British Talents, let's go ahead and pull this up into the conversation real fast. Is because Bridgetown is for Ruby-based sites, right?
Yeah, well, it's for people who have familiarity or even just passing interest in Ruby as a language and are interested in using a static site generator that starts from the place of, you know, you run it as a Ruby program.
Right.
All of the stuff it generates is, you know, all of the same stuff anything else generates: HTML, CSS, and JavaScript.
Is it fair for me, though, in this case, so we said, like, there's a LAMP, a WAMP, and a MAMP. Does this differentiate between a Jamstack and a RAMstack? Is that a...
this is such a good question, and it's actually, like, the most, by far... Right.
Ramstock.
The most confusing thing that I think comes up time and time again. I think how I see it is that acronym JAM. I have always seen it as essentially being backwards from the actual development process. So what I mean by that is starting with markup. So you start with content that's in either HTML format or Markdown format. And Markdown has become really popular with a lot of people, you know, starting with programmers, of course, but even folks that are really not very technical at all. So starting with the M of JAM and then going to the A of JAM, and that's where you kind of go to the next step of like, okay, I have a bunch of content, but you know, what do I do with that content and how do I do something dynamic with that content? So if somebody goes to a page, you know, maybe they get, you know, the initial state of that content. That's the static part of static site generator. They get like a static page, but then something on that page needs to update. So, you know, think of e-commerce, for example, like a product, most of the things of the product won't change on a very regular basis. Like the name of the product will stay the same, you know, at least for a while. You know, some of the descriptive text will stay the same, but something like a price or something like a discount, you know, there's these other bits where you want like literally up to the second accuracy. You don't want a price that was like, well, this was the price when we built the site 5 hours ago and we have a new price, but you know, we don't know how to update the price, you know, at the moment. And so it's like the 5 hours old price. You know, you don't want like stale data.
Right.
So that's where the API bit comes in. You have some kind of way of, you know, once the page loads in the browser, you know, it will connect to an API and say, hey, get me the most up-to-date price. And so it will take the static markup that came from the web server and it will update that in real time. And then that's sort of the final piece, the J, the JavaScript. The JavaScript is how you write that logic. So you have some kind of JavaScript framework. You know, it can be something very simple, like you could literally just write a little bit of vanilla JS, as it's called. Frameworkless JavaScript, you could say, you know, to just, you know, make a request to an API and say, you know, get me the latest data. But it really starts with, you know, some kind of markup, some kind of static site repository that's where you begin. And that's what's so great now about tools like GitHub and these, you know, and Git, of course, and these ways that we have of, you know, where you start with you know, a code base of some kind, a repository that's like, you know, okay, here's some basic content, here's templates, here's you know, JavaScript files, CSS files, you know, maybe they're in, you know, sort of smarter formats, like instead of CSS, maybe it's SCSS or SAS as it's called, and then the build process turns that into regular CSS for the browser. There's this idea now that, you know, when you're building a website project, you're probably starting with a lot of source files in some different formats. And then you have some kind of build process that, you know, every time that process runs, it transforms the source files into the destination files. And then those destination files, that's the static site part of it, that can get deployed anywhere. It could get deployed just to a regular web server like Apache or Nginx. Or it could get deployed to a CDN, a content delivery network. And that's what's you know, really heavily promoted by services like Netlify or Versal. You never have to worry about getting, so this is going to date me, but back in the day there was a term, getting slash dotted.
Don't worry, we beat you to that one a long time ago. We're already hurt by that.
Maybe now it's like getting I don't know, hacker newsed or something. But you know, this idea like, oh, you have like this little blog, but all of a sudden, like, you know, Oprah mentions something or whatever, some crazy thing happens, you get like a million visitors in a day. Like, you know, in the past, everything would completely crap out because you just have a WordPress blog on a little server, like a little shared hosting thing somewhere, and it couldn't handle it. But with a static site that's on a CDN, you know, maybe not like the greatest experience in the world if there's some issue with the, you know, the API connections or whatever, but at least that initial static site, that initial content, the article, the product, the marketing page, whatever it might be, at least that initial static site is always going to get to the person, you know, anywhere in the world. It's going to be super fast, like an order of magnitude faster in many cases than if you have, you know, a dynamic app server somewhere, you know, struggling to handle this influx of customers all of a sudden.
The funny thing about it, we were talking a little bit before the show started about this, and I was sitting here thinking about this, and Aaron, remember when we talked about our first websites and how we built those and how we went about them? And I was thinking about the tool I used to build my first like non-hand-coded sites was a CMS called Coronto. Coronto still exists. You can still go use it. It's a Perl-based system that you would drop into the CGI bin, and it would run from there. But I got to thinking about it, and I'm like, man, we're coming full circle on this, because that tool in 1999, 2000, that was a static site generator. It was a headless CMS that you could put in a little template information into, and it managed whatever structured content you wanted to add to it, and its job was to sit there and then publish out HTML files as a consequence. And so if you changed something in your header or footer or something and saved it, it would then trickle out and regenerate every one of your HTML pages just like a normal static site generator would. And the end result is you have a website that has physical, normal HTML pages there to serve up instead of serving it from a CMS like WordPress. So every visit to your website is generating CPU load. It's generating memory usage. Serving HTML pages, I mean, yes, it requires resources, but Jared, like you were saying, we're talking orders of magnitude difference in terms of what you can do when a database isn't involved and when all of this other overhead is not tied into it. And I just thought that was kind of funny that we're coming back to that. People are looking at this idea and thinking, you know, if I want to build a fast, efficient site, maybe this is the way I should go about it. But I don't think we can do that without talking about what it works well for, because I do think this is one of those things that it works. It's cool and it will do a lot of things, but I don't necessarily think it's right for everything.
Yeah, there's sort of the funny, I don't know what the term for this would be, but if you could envision the opposite of a power curve, you know, instead of it like starting low, going high in the middle and coming down, it's like the opposite. So like in terms of Jamstack stuff being cool, it's like, it's incredibly cool for like, you just want to get a site up quick. You want to use some developer tools that you're familiar with, and it's really easy to do. You can just, you know, like literally in a day, you could like spin up a new repository, you know, stick some markdown files in there, you know, type yarn add Tailwind or Bulma or some cool CSS framework, get a design in there. Usually in a matter of minutes or maybe a half an hour, you can just, you know, type a few commands in the terminal and get an entire site spun up. And then, you know, with something like Netlify, it's literally just a matter of, you know, upload the site to GitHub, connect GitHub to Netlify. Again, these are steps that take mere minutes. And then, you know, Netlify will just automatically know anytime there's a commit, an update on GitHub. And whenever that happens, it automatically rebuilds the site. So it does the automatic static site generation build process every time. And so, like, boom, you can just go from, you know, I have an idea, I'll create a new repository, I'll use my static site generator of choice, you know, add a few bits, stick in some content, put it up on GitHub, use Netlify, and boom, you're on the web with a site, and you don't have to worry about databases and how to deploy this to that and how to, you know, configure a bunch of things. It's all sort of this really easy automatic thing. So that's kind of like the first part of the curve here, where it's like you can get stuff up really fast and in a really kind of fun way. It's a great DX, developer experience. So that's like, it's like UX for the developers among us. A great DX.
Cool. It works well, I think, in cases where, you know, you're putting information out there and then it doesn't have to do anything else. You know, it doesn't have to live a life, so to speak. So blogs, I think, are obvious candidates for that. You know, informational sites or like event sites are things that just are, you know, out there to share something for a while. Even to an extent, like if you wanted to think about a big site, like let's say NBC News, I think even a site like that could get away with using a static site generator, because when you really think about it, what's dynamic on those sites? A lot of the times it's stuff like weather, which can be brought in over JavaScript and APIs. Advertising, which is all JavaScript, and hopefully you're blocking it in your pie hole or using AdBlock or whatever. Sorry, NBC. But like even a big site like that actually could run very statically when you strip away those little elements of what really are dynamic.
Yeah, so that's the other, that's like the other side of the curve here, where you have, you know, these sites that, you know, certainly get updated pretty regularly, but maybe only, you know, once an hour or, you know, even once every 15 minutes. But it's largely like, you know, hey, here's a bunch of information, and that information is just, you know, it's what it is when you go look at it. And so, you know, with these huge sites that are getting just, you know, massive traffic, perhaps, you know, distributed across, you know, a large territory or even the whole world. But there's this kind of middle area where it's more like, you know, I have this like kind of small business thing that's like local, and people need to be able to log in to do some stuff. And there's like a database, and there's a custom backend to manage, you know, a bunch of folks logging in to update something. And that, like, there's this whole sort of like very dynamic kind of business software, like all these other use cases, right, where, you know, trying to fit that whole side of you know, web app and website usage into the Jamstack, it's just not a good fit, at least, you know, not with the current state of things.
Well, just to throw out like a good example of what just won't work as a static site, Facebook would just not function properly.
Oh, right.
Because everything about it is meant to be dynamic and changing and adapting to what you're doing. And so for them, they have everything has to be done on the fly in real time to show you what you're searching for. And the other thing is, most static site generators work on the assumption of sort of brute forcing their way through like iterations of things. So let's say you have a blog with 100 posts, and in that site are archive pages. As a result, when you publish one post, it builds that page out, but it will also regenerate your archive pages because all of the order has to shift down by one. Imagine somebody like Facebook trying to generate timelines for everybody that way. It just doesn't work. It doesn't scale that way. You know, you could have a fully static front end, but your shopping cart is going to be an app. It's going to be a web app. It's not going to be a static generator with just JavaScript and APIs. It needs to do too much. It needs to be smart in ways that, you know, again, right tool, right job sort of thinking. If your site is a blog and all you need is search, well, you can add search. There are plenty of tools, you know, whether you're using Google Custom Search or something like that, or a tool like Amazon, you can do it all over API with Amazon Cloud Search or something like that. So it's all tied back to JavaScript and APIs to generate markup. So you can have a search page that's a wrapper, but it's a container for that JavaScript and API interaction. And that lets you still have a static page as a consequence of what you're doing. Advertising is one. You know, advertisers are always loaded over JavaScript. So even though your ads may change on your site, your code doesn't have to, because the JavaScript determines what app or what ad should show up in your sidebar, in your footer, you know, whatever you're looking at there. For search too, and I forgot to mention, Lunar.js is one that is an alternative to Lunar as opposed to like Solr. Are you familiar with Solr, Aaron or Jared?
Solr, like the search?
Yeah, Solr search.
Not engine, but back-end tool.
Apache Solr.
Yeah.
So Lunar is like sort of an inverse of that. That's a bad choice of words, but
yeah, I've worked with it a few times, and it's pretty cool because your static site could actually generate like basically a separate file that's in JSON format that just has like, hey, here's a bunch of structured data, you know, for everything in my site. So it's just this big wad of data, and so under the hood, like when your user goes to your site, it can just, you know, behind the scenes say, hey, get me this big wad of JSON.
Right.
And then Lunar will go through that and generate the search index in the browser. So by the time you get to the search field, start typing in stuff, it can just instantly start, you know, offering suggestions and, you know, links to things.
That's cool.
Because there are too many combinations of all the words in the English language. Like you're talking about, you know, quintillions of pages. to make combinations for each one of those outcomes.
I think in those sorts of cases, you know, and especially with really large data sets, you know, the pure Jamstack sort of approach usually doesn't work. But there are ways of where an external search engine will, you know, basically do the same thing that Google does, and it will just crawl your static site, index everything, and, you know, do that on a somewhat regular basis. So when you do go to search, mm-hmm. You know, you're talking to this external service, which is dynamic, but that service has indexed all of the, you know, static content within the, you know, whatever the last, you know, few hours or something, it has indexed things. And that can work pretty well sometimes.
Yeah. If the targets are finite and you know what the targets are and you know what the basic metadata would be of how people would get there, you should be able to pre-calculate that.
And this is why I think when you've got a static site, you'll see this in places where, so for instance, let's go back to the shopping cart idea. Jared, you had mentioned, you know, a product itself doesn't necessarily change very much. A product, it can be a static thing, but the cart is where you actually enter the app. And so when you click that add to cart button, you get sent to cart.yoursite.com. And it looks the same. It's got the same markup, but suddenly you're at a different domain. The same can be true for things like search, where when you go to hit that search box, you may actually end up at search.yoursite.com, and they've got their header and footer wrapped around whatever tool they're using, but they're using a tool specific to that job to take on the highly dynamic portion so that they can let the rest of their site be really lightweight. I think when you start thinking about static site generation in that way, you'll start to notice like all of these times when people ship you off to other domains for those certain, you know, and we do that even when we aren't doing static site generation. We do that all the time when we're using other tools. So,
right.
Yeah. And these sort of places, like these different areas where things get plugged in from other services, you know, in the past that often would be really janky, where it'd be like, oh, there's this weird iframe in the middle of the page, right, or, you know, somewhere somehow I'm on some other thing, it looks completely different. But, you know, there's so many techniques now to create pretty seamless blends from the user perspective, so they don't really feel like they're kind of going from service to service. And one other thing I'd like to point out too, real quick, just as something that I think deserves mention, talking about the Jamstack, is, you know, it's not just interesting from a performance standpoint, but it's also really interesting from a security standpoint. And that's actually one of the main reasons I got into it a few years ago.
Yes, static HTML is incredibly secure. It's as secure as your server is, basically.
Yeah.
Originally, when I got into Jekyll, I took a look at it, and it kind of dawned on me, like, wait a minute. If I build a site and you know, use something like Jekyll, the static site generator, you know, once I hand that repository and that published site to the client, like, you know, if they don't change anything, and if I don't change anything, it will stay the same pretty much forever. Like, that's a snapshot in time, and it won't change. It can't be hacked. It can't break. There's nothing to update. It's just that snapshot in time. So, you know, there's really no maintenance to have to worry about there, which is super awesome.
So you are the guy behind Bridgetown, and Bridgetown is a static site generator, but it is a static site generator that works in Ruby as opposed to a more, let's say, you know, traditional Jamstack. Like, it's not React, it's not Vue. Now, I'm not a Ruby guy, so I'm going to lean on Aaron in my other window here to help me through this part of the conversation. But is that like, is it a gem? Is it like, how does it fit into the Ruby architecture?
I'll try to break this down as quickly as I can, because, you know, we could get into the weeds really quickly. But, you know, as you mentioned earlier, there's a bunch of static site generators, but a few kind of stand out in broader awareness these days. You know, something like Gatsby, it's written in JavaScript.
Right.
So the language you need to have installed on your computer in order to run a Gatsby site on your computer is essentially Node. You need to have Node in order to run that JavaScript application.
Okay.
In that sense, it's just the same as something like Jekyll or Bridgetown, which are Ruby. you know, all you need is in this case the Ruby language. So you know, you have Ruby installed, okay, and run it that way. There's another stack site generator, Hugo, which is written in the Go language, and Hugo got popular. Hugo, yeah. There's a joke in there somewhere, I'm sure. Right. But Hugo got popular a while back because Go is an extremely fast language. So, you know, if you have a site with, like, if your blog is, you know, for whatever reason has, like, you know, 100,000 posts, and, you know, you're using something like Jekyll and it's taking, you know, a minute or two every time you make a little change, and you switch to Hugo and it happens, you know, maybe in just a few seconds, you know, that's kind of a cool thing. Point being, you know, there's a bunch of different programming languages and there's a bunch of different generators that all use those languages. Where it gets a little confusing is some, not all, but some of the JavaScript static site generators do this kind of interesting thing where the tool that you use to, you know, to actually generate the site, you know, the way you write your templates and the way that you kind of define the relationships between the data and the templates, you're actually using a front-end framework like React or Vue on the back end. And it's, I know, if you're not used to this, it's kind of like, what? But for the folks who are doing that, you know, it seems kind of second nature to them now. But you're essentially using, you know, client-side, browser-side technology on the back end to actually generate the static site. And in some of these cases, you know, if you have, you know, say a JavaScript component, like a React component, the React component could generate the static version of it as part of the stack build process. But then on the client side, when you load the site, it goes through what's called a hydration step. So the component will hydrate the static markup and convert it to something more dynamic, you know, as part of how you write things in React. I have a huge, you know, if you could see me now, I'm like, you know, making like blinking banner motions with my hand, like danger, danger, alert, alert. Because what happens often with these things is, you know, first of all, it can get really complicated really fast because you're trying to use technology that's running in two different places. At the, you know, you're using the same technology for two completely different things. You're using the same technology to generate HTML through a build process and to do dynamic things in a browser, and the you know, the where the lines blur and how those things interact, I'm finding, you know, at least with, you know, say more junior developers that I talk to, nobody understands how it works. Like, they just flat out don't understand how it's working. For example, I got a question about Bridgetown, like somebody saying, like, well, I'm already using stuff like Gatsby and I'm writing React components, so why would I want to generate stuff on the server with Bridgetown? And I was just kind of like, oh no. Because the thing is, like, by default with Gatsby, like, the point is that it is generating HTML on the back end and you're getting a static site. But because it's using this client-side technology, everyone's getting super confused. So, you know, it's one of these situations where, you know, there's a lot of cool tools out there now, but some of them are like very, very sharp knives and everyone's kind of cutting themselves and then realizing, like, uh-oh, I've done something really weird here and I don't understand what's happening.
So since you're using client-side stuff, I know that in the Rails community, they recently moved over to kind of embracing Webpacker for asset building. Like, are you doing something like that? Or maybe, what's the other one?
Rollup.
No, there was like, it was Webpacker and then a different one. But like, it seems like everyone's converging on Webpacker now.
Like so many of these things, there's a bunch of options, but yeah. So Webpack, So Webpack was the primary reason I got frustrated with Jekyll, because, you know, I'd been using Jekyll for a few years. I love Ruby. I'm a proud Rubyist. But the thing that was frustrating was, you know, Jekyll was only concerned with just the HTML, you know, maybe a little bit of the CSS side of things, and that was it. So if you wanted to add, you know, more smarts on the JavaScript side, if you wanted to add a client-side framework, you know, if you want to do fancier things with your CSS as part of the build process, Jekyll just really didn't do anything for you. So you'd have to go find something like Webpack and just figure it out. You'd have to come up with your own Webpack configuration. You'd have to, you know, get everything set up there. Jekyll wouldn't know anything about it. And then you'd have to figure out how to tell Jekyll, like, okay, here's my JavaScript bundle. Here's my CSS bundle. You know, here's how you link to it. And you have to kind of wire it all up together. And that was one of the reasons why some people, you know, would go off to something like Next.js or Gatsby or whatever, because they, you know, they want something to just kind of come with a front-end configuration out of the box. But what I ended up doing with Bridgetown, which ended up being a fork of Jekyll, so it kind of took Jekyll.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so...
very cool.
It started with the base of Jekyll, because mad props to Jekyll. It's a great product, but you know, I loved it so much I wanted to make it better. So with Bridgetown, the first thing I did was basically set up a default out of the box Webpack configuration, and you know, just do a little bit of tooling on the Ruby side, so it knows, you know, every time the site build, it knows like, okay, here's the JavaScript bundle, here's the CSS bundle, we're going to include this in the site, and away you go. So, you know, so right now, like, you can go to bridgetownrb.com and, you know, read the getting started thing there, and, you know, just following some simple instructions there, you know, if you create your first Bridgetown site, it already has Webpack ready to go. You can add a CSS framework. You can start to add something like React if you need to. You might not even need to, but you can if you want to. You know, in theory, in the not-so-distant future, you could have a pretty simple Bridgetown site where, you know, Ruby generates the static site. There's also some Ruby functions that you can call as an API dynamically, and it has the JavaScript front end to add, you know, more interactive things like charts and maps, and when you click buttons, something happens, and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of this really interesting hybrid approach.
There was a discussion I had on Twitter recently with some people about how someone was browsing the web with, I think it was Node.js activated, and there was a lot of sites they went to where it was just a plain white page with like nothing at all, or it just, a lot of the page just broke. And the discussion was like whether or not we should still be building sites that degenerate gracefully. And I think it's great that this is still happening, because I think it's important. I'm not that, like, you kind of need JavaScript enabled just to use most of the internet anymore, which is tragic, but
yeah, I never disabled JavaScript in normal usage. I'm not an animal. but right.
But I think that, you know, like, if you don't have it, I think over-reliance on JavaScript, just because it can be super buggy and capricious about things.
There's a million ways to write bad JavaScript. I mean, let's
face it. And sometimes, like, if you have one component that's provided by a third party and then you have a different component provided by a different third party, it's possible for them to collide and to be unaware of that. And the site should still work even without it. So I think it's really cool that that Bridgetown takes that approach.
Yeah, you end up typically with much smaller JavaScript and possibly even CSS bundles out of the gate, because you're not starting from this place of like, I'm just gonna go crazy writing React components everywhere, and I'm gonna pull in all these add-ons and all these things, and it's gonna be amazing, and we're gonna have, you know, GraphQL things flying right and left, and you know, it all seems very cool. But then you end up in a situation like, for example, I've actually been on a project for a while using Next.js, and you know, there's a lot of things I like about it, but I did turn off JavaScript recently and went to one of the pages we've worked on, and kind of realized to my horror that half the page was gone. It was just completely gone. And I was like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Some of the page looks all right, but some of the page is gone. And I realized it was because we are using a React component that was a responsive design component, where it was, you know, sort of dynamically removing or inserting content based on, you know, the size of the browser window. And the problem was the static version of the page that got generated, it didn't know what the browser size was, because it was generated through a server. It's like, uh-oh. But there is no browser size when it's generating this page for the first time, because it's not in a browser.
How do you, if someone wants to start using Bridgetown, what do they need to start? What do they need to do it? Like, how does someone get on board?
Yeah, well, I mean, you do need Ruby. You know, all you need to do is have that installed. And we have a little bit of documentation even how to get that set up. But you need Ruby, and you do need Node for the JavaScript side so you can use Webpack. But once you have those two things, then it's kind of just a matter of typing, you know, Bridgetown new my cool site in your terminal, and it just generates, you know, sort of a basic site template. And then, you know, just add a blog post, like type out a markdown file and stick it in a folder and, you know, type in a command and, and poof, it builds and you see the blog post and you're like, wow, it worked. That's kind of fun.
So the user would be creating, would be writing the content using a markdown, like to basically create the content.
Yeah. So that's the sort of default approach. Now you can use a headless CMS like we've talked about. And, you know, there are ways that aren't too hard to do. You could just write a little plugin, and we're working on documentation right now to make this like really clear how to do it. But, you know, basically with just a few lines of code, really, you know, instead of your blog post being in your repository as a file alongside all the rest of the code, it could be in a headless CMS somewhere, and then you just use REST or a GraphQL API. So in your Bridgetown site, you would just write a little Ruby plugin that's basically like, you know, call this API, you know, query for some posts. Okay, I got the posts. Now I'll just, you know, output that to, you know, a file, and there's an, you know, a really easy way to do it. You're not, you know, literally like having to figure out how to write a text file. You're just using some nice little commands to say like, you know, okay, so out of the data that came through the API, you know, here's the title, here's the categories, here's the author, here's the main body of the content, here's the date. And then it's as if that were an actual file in the repository. You know, as far as Bridgetown is concerned, it doesn't matter whether it's an actual file or whether it's something coming from a headless CMS. You know, in the build process when it's generating everything, it's all the same to you know, in at that part of the process. So that's pretty cool. You can use either approach. I kind of like to have content in Git as much as possible, at least for simpler sites, because you just get built-in versioning and you can roll back things really easily. And you know, for end users, you know, there are ways to give them, you know, a simple editor that, you know, looks vaguely like WordPress, where they can type in some stuff, but under the hood, it just saves a file to the repository. But you can use a full-blown headless CMS with all the trimmings if you want to.
The thing I'm thinking about here to tie this back to another topic we hit on, when we had Brian Olendijk on talking about Hacks CMS and the work he's doing to create a Gutenberg-like block editor that is better than Gutenberg in terms of usability and accessibility and output. Because something you think about when we get into like HTML content, you know, it's easy to think about, well, Markdown is a great way to write documentation and things like that, but doesn't facilitate design very well at all, because Markdown is just a text formatting type of markup, well, Markdown. But with something like Hacks, you could build a system that gives you full capabilities to have control over layout and organization of your content and orientation of your content and all of those things, and have that spit out something like HTML blobs in any kind of system, whether that's something that's written with JavaScript or written with Ruby or any of those, and as a result, still have a very high level of control over the design and layout of these pages, even though you're running them through a static site generator to output a site.
That's really cool. Yeah, that's kind of a dream of mine, you know, ultimately, to see some kind of tool that's, you know, more of a visual page builder. But it's, you know, it's a, I don't know what you call it, headless page builder, yeah, where it's, you know, you're building your advanced layout for some really cool page, and it stores it in some, you know, some structured format. But then, yeah, you could use any kind of static site generator or you know, whatever you want to take that page structure, however it's defined, and then, you know, turn it into the final thing and use your own design system and all that cool stuff. That would be super awesome.
So if you're starting all of your content basis with Markdown, and you mentioned design system, what if you do a site redesign? How easy is it to like basically rebuild your whole site from those Markdown files?
It really varies from, you know, from static site generator to, you know, from each one, depending on how it defines things through templates. So you know, Jekyll and Bridgetown and a few others have used a template language called Liquid. So, you know, whether you're writing an HTML template itself or you're writing something in Markdown, you can augment it with Liquid tags and filters. So, you know, in WordPress lingo, okay, you might call that short codes, you know, or something like that, where you know, in line in your text, or you're kind of saying like
Ruby has, what is it called?
ERB.
No, I'm not thinking of ERB. There's a different one, isn't there? For, or maybe I'm thinking of PHP. There was a thing like short tags that you could do.
Oh, okay.
It was a while ago. That's fine. ERB is a good example.
No, I think it might. No. Smarty? Was that a thing in PHP?
Yes. Yes.
Smarty. Yeah. Yeah. The idea there being like, instead of writing your template literally in PHP, which kind of was a template language to start out with, you know, write it in something a little simpler, a little nicer, a little safer, like Smarty. Liquid's sort of the evolution of that in more modern times. Shopify uses Liquid, so if you set up a store on Shopify and you customize templates there, you're using Liquid tags right there in their system. But some other ones use a template language called Nunchucks. It's kind of similar to Liquid. Anyway, there's different ways to do it. But
I've used Nunchucks in Markdown for a system called Fractal. We do a pattern library in a system called Fractal that uses Markdown for all of the stuff. But like, we want to do things, for instance, like generate color swatches from a definition file. So we use that to generate something that is loopable and outputs, you know, pretty stuff, so to speak.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to do it. But basically the idea is, you know, whether you're sort of base level text content is in HTML or Markdown or something else, you then augment that with some extra template smarts, you know, looping through things, transforming a data value from one thing to another. You know, Bridgetown can do some pretty cool things with Liquid. And we're actually working on sort of an extra little spec add-on to Liquid called Liquid Components. And this is really what gets to your question. So, you know, the dream there is that you could write some Liquid components, which, you know, are essentially like, you know, think of your traditional site, like, you know, maybe you'd have a component for a nav bar, and maybe even that would have a few components like logo, links, you know, a search bar, like maybe those are little components. And then, you know, you have some stuff on your page, like a sidebar component and a footer component. And the nice thing about using something like Liquid Components for that is, you know, it plays really well with Bridgetown, but in theory, you could take a Liquid component and plug it into some other static site generator, and as long as you know, kind of generally have the same, you know, design system, like, you know, CSS and so forth, working, those Liquid component templates will just work the same way. And it's, you know, it's part of the build process. It's server based, so, you know, it helps to generate the static site. But then on the client side, you could, you know, use something to hydrate, using that term again, to hydrate the component if it needs to do something really advanced. So, you know, you could maybe use something like like React or Vue there. But you could also just use like an open standard web components approach, which I'm personally mostly interested in these days because it's gotten so much better in browsers now in terms of support. So the idea being that you could just write a little web component that is just, you know, some specific JavaScript structured in a way that's completely cross-browser now, you know, at least with modern browsers. And it could just, you know, basically, you know, load in the HTML that's provided through the static site and, you know, just do things like, you know, make the button do something when you click on it, or, you know, there's this little spot here that's, you know, blank out of the gate, but we want to, you know, add a bunch of things in there, like, you know, items of a to-do list, or, yeah, the sky's the limit. But the idea, you know, is that, you know, you have some components defined through the static site that are more concerned with, you know, the layout and the design and the base content, and then you make it do cool stuff on the client side with these hydrated web components. And so this hybrid architecture is, cool, is, you know, somewhat of a bleeding edge thing, but, you know, it's not just me trying to do it. So many people are trying to do this and to crack this nut. you know, it's like the Holy Grail, I guess you could say. Somebody somewhere will hopefully kind of, you know, help pave the way a little bit in terms of widespread adoption.
Well, best of luck to you. I'm excited to try it out. I've even thought, you know, we were talking earlier about what kind of sites would work well as, you know, a site run by static site generation. The Drunken UX site has no reason to be ran straight out of WordPress. We could easily integrate a static site generator with that. Syntax does it.
Yeah, we don't really do any of the like dynamic content that you might do with WordPress. I think the only thing we have is the got some dashboard stuff, right? For
that's
analytics,
in the back end, so that doesn't matter.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah.
CMS approach. At that point, you know, you can think about the system. So Syntax, the Syntax podcast, Wes Boss's show, runs out of GitHub, and all their show notes are ran in Markdown. And so when they, you know, do something to fix or update a set of show notes, it automatically publishes to their website that way. So there's a lot there that we could leverage on, you know, to change the way we would host a site like ours, quite frankly. If this stuff is exciting to you, go check out. We'll have a bunch of stuff in the show notes from some of the tools like Lunar, if you want to learn more about that, if you want to learn more about, you know, how to set up a build process for static sites and make that part of your build so that things will trigger automatically in continuous integration, if that's the way you're set up. If you want to learn more about just different stuff, that staticgen.com site is a great one. Or, of course, the Bridgetown project if you are a Ruby dev. All of those will be linked up in the show notes. Stick with us. We're going to take a quick break, and we will get you right on your way to your next show. The Drunken UX Podcast is brought to you by our friends at NewCloud. NewCloud is an industry-leading interactive map provider who has been building location-based solutions for organizations for a decade. Are you trying to find a simple solution to provide your users with an interactive map of your school, city, or business? Well, NewCloud's interactive map platform gives you the power to make and edit a custom interactive map in just minutes. They have a team of professional cartographers who specialize in map illustrations of many different styles and are ready to design an artistic rendering to fit your exact needs. One map serves all of your users' devices with responsive maps that are designed to scale and blend in seamlessly with your existing website. To request a demonstration or to view their portfolio, visit them online at newcloud.com/drunkenUX. That's newcloud.com/drunkenUX. Jared, man, thanks for sitting down with us this evening. We appreciate you taking the time out of your day. I know the funnest part of running a podcast is trying to organize people in different time zones, and this time we hit three of the four. Yeah. So
my pleasure.
We almost got all of them, but the microphone is yours. Take it for a second and tell folks where they can find you, what you got going on, and anything that you want them to know.
Yeah. So first of all, the Bridgetown project is just at bridgetownrb.com. RB for Ruby. And at bridgetownrb.com, it talks a little bit about the project right there on the front page, so you can find out more. There's also a page about the Jamstack in particular that's a little more generic, so that might be kind of educational and interesting. You can find me on the web just generally at jaredwhite.com, on Twitter, Jared C. White, and that's pretty much it.
Awesome.
So be sure to connect with us. We forgot to mention it earlier, but Twitter and Facebook.com/DrunkenUX and DrunkenUX.com or Instagram.com/DrunkenUX podcast and DrunkenUX.com/Discord to come and chat with us.
Folks, at the end of the day with all of this, you know, you got to think about how these tools fit into your workflow and whether or not it's right. Not a static site generator is not the right tool for every website. And so every product that lands at your feet, this may not be the way to go. So look into it, learn about it a little bit more, use some of the articles we've got in the show notes to understand the ins and outs of it and what their use cases are. You know, throwback to episode 61, the emergency site episode, where we talked about why a static site generator can help you, you know, serve a lot more pages because it reduces overhead. So things like that, learn how to evaluate some of those things and understand that no matter which one you go with, which tool you pick, it doesn't matter because the only thing you should be doing is keeping your personas close and your users closer. Bye-bye.
See ya.